Right then, Scott, let's jump straight in then, shall we? Because obviously
Sure.
this is a huge thing for you, because up until now you've had individual series launch. Now you've got a whole line of books launching on October the 5th, very pithily called Scottober the 5th. How are you actually feeling about it all?
Oh man, I'm so nervous, but I'm really excited, honestly. We've been working on these books for a bunch of years. I mean, a lot of them were passion projects that me and my co-creator would like squirrel away time on. So like Night of the Ghoul and Clear, probably the oldest. We've been working on them since, 2015, 2016. Just whenever we could, we would work on them. And they grew and became more and more kind of what we wanted to do full time. And really what happened was I started doing that with a bunch of the books in the line. Greg and I talked about squirreling away time as we were doing our DC work. Dan Panosian and I started working on Canary. Lisa Atulo-Lote and I on Barnstormers, and Raphael and I planned on working on Duck and Cover once we were done with American Vampire. And so this process was all about kind of doing it when we could, figuring out a way of financing the book as we went, so that I would pay things out to the co-creators, unless they could wait until we published it. But each thing was sort of moving along differently. And then when the pandemic hit, we all sort of had to take a step back and say, are we going to continue with these, or are we going to play it really safe and try and recommit to licensed work at DC, Marvel, other places? And we all just felt it prioritized it for us. It really, for me, I've been planning on doing a big kind of creator-owned push at the end of my DC stuff for a good 10 years. And I went to my co-creators, and luckily they were all really eager about trying to find ways of doing the books, but also doing them in a way that would allow for them to be affordable and progressive in the way that they were both made and published, and would secure a good wage for them, in times when at times that are scary, and rates are contracting for artists and so on. And so we started talking about different options, about kickstarting or doing some at Image, doing some over here or there. And then we wound up talking to Chip at Comixology, Chip Mosher, and they had just finished this deal with Dark Horse, where they were going to publish in print in the direct market everything that they published digitally. And so it was this perfect moment when I was thinking to myself, like, we need to be a part of something that shows how comics can work in a healthier, better way on the other side of the pandemic. Keep the books super affordable for fans. Make sure that we can secure a good wages for, good rates for our co-creators. And at the same time, have a lot of creative freedom to do the books however we want. And so all of that was there with us. So I feel nervous because it's so comprehensive and big at 8 books, it's huge, and it's gonna, be a lot of my creative life over the next year. But I honestly couldn't be prouder of these books. I think that they're easily some of the best stuff that I've been involved in. And I'm really grateful to Comixology Originals for giving us such breadth and space to make them, and then also being really receptive to our ideas about not only kind of which books would fit different formats better. Like, some of them are monthly issues. I mean, some of them in terms of the digital are coming out at certain sizes, like 20 pages versus 30 pages. They're just always like, whatever you think is best for the story. And then we're going to be doing some experimentation in the direct market as well. Things they haven't tried before, with the books hitting the direct market in ways that are probably best suited for each book individually. Ways that'll help retailers actually sell the books. So we're really thrilled about the whole thing. I'm, over the moon. I can't believe it's all real and it's happening now.
I mean, the first you mentioned, Clear and Night of the Ghoul, the three comics you're coming out, as well as We Have Demons, they're three very chunky first issues. How are you managing with still a few more series to come out, and one of those being in prose? How you manage to juggle it all and still keep up with Undiscovered Country and Nocterra? I mean, you look quite tired, if I'm honest.
Oh, I am. I'm tired, but I'm happy. I mean, this is what I've always wanted to do is, you know, work in comics, but also, and do all the superhero stuff that I've loved doing for a long time. But this moment, you know, getting to work on books that I've been thinking about that are personal to me with co-creators that are as invested in them as I am and have contributed as much as I have to them story-wise and art-wise, is just, that's the real dream, you know? So I wake up happy even though I'm exhausted. And also the other secret to it is that they're really staggered. So like, for example, I'm already 5 issues into Clear and Night of the Ghoul. And Demons, We Have Demons is finished. I finished the whole book already, like the whole 100 plus pages of it. So like I've done all that and now I'm working on the second wave, which is, you know, Barnstormers and Canary, Dan and I had been talking about for a long time. And so again, that book had half of it written. I have already over half of it written and it doesn't come out until the second wave, which is sort of is when, without giving specifics, like that, those books will hit when these books end. So we'll kind of do it in successive waves. So there's quite a while, if you think about it, 6 months in the future, you know what I mean? Before that, those books even begin, and most of them are well in underway. So yes, it is a ton of work, but A, I love it. And B, it's staggered out. So there's sort of, it's not me kind of juggling 8 books all at once and running from one to the other. There's sort of 3 at any one time. And that's the kind of schedule I had at DC as well.
And I think you're not exhausting the readers either in that way. Like I said, the 3 books, I'm aware our time is limited today, so I'd love to focus on each one in turn and give them the spotlight. Sure. But those 3 books, even though 2 of them are horror, they're very different. I mean, We Have Demons is very much a contemporary horror, whereas sort of Night of the Ghoul reminds me of the Hammer House of horror films, Amicus kind of style film as well. So obviously horror is your background. But I must admit, We Have Demons really blew me away. The others have as well. So let's just focus on that because obviously it gives the opportunity to get back with your brother from another mother. What was that like getting back to him? And how long has that been in gesticulation period?
Oh, man. I mean, thanks for saying. I mean, that's the linchpin of the whole thing for me was, you know, for the whole 10 years that Greg and I have been working together, I kept saying to him, like, when we're done, we have to do Creator Own together at some point. And he felt the same way, but it just, we couldn't wait to do it. And we knew we needed the right project and the right setup. And we were going to do it ourselves no matter what. And then when Comixology came along and I was talking to them about, you know, how big this project was and how important to us it was, they were so receptive about, listen, go R-rated, do whatever you want, you know, with it. And they just gave us that room because I think what some people don't realize, you know, is being on Batman the way we were and then on Death Metal and Metal, it's a grind. I mean, it's the best job and I love it and I'm intensely grateful for it. But you have to imagine that like every month for Greg was, you have to draw, he only took a couple issues off the entire run. So every single month was like a race against the deadline and a physical, you know, challenge for him to sit there and do. And so there was always this stress about how can Batman, you know, it can't drop in sales. It supports all these other books. Events certainly can't do poorly in sales. How are we going to, you know, promote it? How am I going to be a juggling bear on a unicycle and the whole thing? And all of it was always, you know, about making things that we loved, but there was just so much also pressure and stress around those that to get to do a book with him and with John Glapion, who was our inker for the majority of our time on Batman, and with Dave McKeag, who's our American Vampire colorist, is such a joy, you know, where we made it as we wanted. Like I said, I'm finished with it. Greg is finishing the 3rd issue, which is they're all oversized right now. There's no pressure. Like we did it on our own time with all the room in the world. And we're so proud of it because we want to say like, I believe it's our best thing, but it really is that, you know, this is what we can do when we have time and space to make something that we love. And So it's great. And we own it together. You know, the other thing that was important was Comixology Originals was great about, you know, their deal was great about allowing creators to retain all the ancillary rights, no percentages and no kickbacks in that way. So it's the first thing we get to own together. We made so much at DC that we're so proud of. And a lot of that stuff has taken on a second life, you know, with the Court of Owls and the video game and the animated stuff and Batman Who Laughs and Fortnite and all this, which is great. But, you know, we don't have any say or control over that. And even though DC has been generous to us and made sure we have equity, we don't control any of it. So having these characters, Gus and Lamb and the whole crew, the whole cast, the angels and, you know, all the bad guys.
Yeah.
Like it's our thing. It's like Saturday morning cartoons, but on steroids and R-rated. Like that's what we want it to feel. All the energy of like metal and death metal and Batman and Last Night and all the stuff that we did that you guys enjoyed. I hope you'll see this is like that, but ramped up and also with a lot of heart, like a lot of, I wanted to make sure it wasn't just like explosive. It is, but it also like a lot of character development, a lot of emotion.
Well, you lay a lot down in that first issue. Even within the first couple of pages, you've laid out a lot of groundwork to explore in later series. I do hope it comes back for a second, third and continuous volume. That's the joyous horror of it. Whereas Night of the Ghoul is more of a sort of creeping gothic horror, isn't it? You know, it's this kind of cursed film. And of course, this old director who's hidden out in a retirement village, but until he gets found out, I don't want to give too much away. Is there anything else you can say about that particular title with Francesco Francavella? I hope I'm saying his name right.
Yeah.
Francesco Francavella. Right. Yeah. Who's, of course, a master of horror himself.
Oh, he's the best. Yeah. And he's also a dear friend. You know, he was one of the first artists that took a chance on me back when we did Black Mirror together at Detective Comics. And we've been friends ever since, our families and all of it. And to get to do a creator-owned with him finally is also a big thrill. And we both share this love of classic horror, you know, all the Hammer movies, Universal monster movies, all of that stuff. Like, you know, we both have a lot of collector sets and models and all of that. And we wanted to do a story that paid homage to those kinds of movies, but updated the horror with a really unsettling, piercing sensibility and made it feel urgent and resonant now. So the book is intertwining of these two narratives. One is about a man, Forrest Inman, and his son who travel to this rest home to find who the man they believe is the writer director of this lost famous film, Night of the Ghoul, that was destroyed in a studio fire, to interview him. And that story is all about this old man that they find, his delusions about that the ghoul from the movie he believes the ghoul from the movie is real and it's hiding in the building and everyone in the building is in league against them. And they've kept him here for years against his will. And this whole kind of terrifying, paranoid, claustrophobic, single kind of night adventure is one part of it. And it intercuts with the black and white fragments of the original film, the fictional film that Francesco draws, as though they're kind of marked up, charred pieces of the original film. And so it goes back and forth between these two stories. And so it has this kind of experimental structure, and yet it's one of the most, I think, like tightly wound stories I've ever done. And I love it for its claustrophobia and its paranoia and dread. So it's also one of the darkest. And the reason that, you know, each book is resonant in its own way. I mean, Night of the Ghoul, it's about a monster that birthed all the other monsters, the legends of the other monsters. It's about a being, a ghoul, and nobody knows how many there are, if there's one or hundreds, but that are among the most ancient living things on Earth that hide in human hosts. They're these creepy, long-fingered, almost spider-like humanoid things. And they crawl inside a human host, hide in that host for its life cycle, influence that host now so that the host is secretly kind of under their control, the host eats necrotic dead material, like corpses and all that stuff, which is the myth of, you know, a ghoul is a person that eats the dead. And in doing so, powers the ghoul to get stronger and stronger over time. And they release diseases and pestilence. They're kind of creature of pestilence. And eventually, after 100 years or so in a body, they're strong enough to release massive plagues. And the one in question has been saving up in the movie, in the old fragments of the old movie, and that this old man, T.F. Merritt, believes is here in the building, is about to release like a civilization-ending plague. It's been sort of hiding in different human hosts for many, many generations. And so he believes it's this creature that's about to kind of level life as we know it. And he believes they're people that worship the ghoul because they feel life has become too complex and too egotistical and solipsistic a system. And instead it should be brought back to basics about surviving death and about all of this kind of civilization, you know, all of the whole, all of progress and evolution, all of this is this fallacy that needs to be kind of taught its own hubris, and that we need to go back to this primal life and death situation. And that's what the ghoul is about. And so whether or not the ghoul is real, you'll have to read the book and see, but spoiler, it's pretty real. And so it becomes this really fun, terrifying, I think, back and forth between the old movie, which is the, you know, classic looking film, and the terror of the moment in this one single night in this rest home.
And again, it's, you know, it's a great choice of artist to go with that particular story, in the same way as Francis Manapul is the great choice of artist for your sort of neo-noir sort of gumshoe. I'm calling it Raymond Chandler meets sort of Blade Runner seen through an Oculus. Now, obviously, Francis Manapul is a wonderful artist, and he does his own colours, and that's what I mean by neo-noir. It really lights up, but in many ways, there are those gumshoe elements of Raymond Chandler class. And again, I don't want to give too much away. So what can you say with the little time we've got left about Clear issue number one?
Well, that's a special book as well. And it's, you know, the books aren't kind of things I wrote and then gave to artists. They were developed together with co-creators. So Francis and I, he came, his family was staying with my family a few years ago, and we started talking about this back and forth as an idea. We were talking about how we regretted that our kids were growing up at a time that was so divisive, and also that everyone is sort of isolated in their own subjective bubble wrap in different ways, and seems to want that, you know, and instead of meeting in the middle or trying to have a dialogue about some of the systemic problems that we need to face, people seem lately, you know, to prefer to find their own silos in different ways, and just blow the whole thing up. And so we started this book about what if, and we were working on this when we were on Justice League back in 2017, 2016. What if in the future, everyone connects to the internet neurologically and can now screen the world however they want, or skin it however they want, just visually with their own eyes. They upload things called veils. And so it's this popular thing that everybody does. And so you no longer have to look out and see the world as it is. You can, you know, veil it manga style or porn style or 1940s black and white noir style. So it's a visual feast for Francis, but ultimately it's a murder mystery also about a man who is a detective who always keeps the setting on clear and wants to track down the killer of this woman that he knew and cared about in the past. But it's very about this moment, even though it takes place in a strange future. It's literally, it's about this fear that he and I both have, that we, all of us, would rather kind of slip into this decline and this sort of multiplicity of cocoons, you know, as opposed to finding some public and common space to push forward. And that's really the book. So it has a lot, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and crazier. It's one of those mysteries that kind of unravels the whole world it's built. And I love it for that. And, you know, we have demons too. It's written for our kids. It's written, you know, for me, not for a child, but it's written as an apology for how badly kind of the world has become screwed up on everybody our watch, for my 14-year-old and my 10-year-old to be like, here are the tools that we should have used differently for you to decide how to use them yourselves to make something better than what existed exists now. So all the books have this very personal sort of purpose for existing, but they're very different from one another. You know, like Clear is extremely like dark and urgent, and Night of the Ghoul is a lot more big, and it's a lot bigger in its mythology and has this kind of has a kind of a primal question about whether life has become something that is unfixable. And, you know, We Have Demons announces itself as a story about faith in the future,
yeah,
against all odds. So it's that it's each one is special in its own right.
And honestly, I really enjoyed reading through all three issues last night and today. I wish you all the best for it, and I hope to bump into a thought bubble in November, Scott.